Our next case is 2015-1205, Greater Dayton Regional Transit Authority versus the State Employment Relations Board et al. For the appellant, for the appellant, Ms. Edwards.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name is Jennifer Edwards. I'm here on behalf of the Greater Dayton Regional Transit Authority, or GDRTA. This morning, and I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of time for a rebuttal, please. This morning, the court is presented with a simple yes or no question. When used in revised code section 4117.13d, is the phrase transacts business ambiguous? The answer is no. Ohio Public Employees Collective Bargaining Act, which is codified in RC 4117.13d, provides an appeal of an adverse order on an unfair labor practice charge may be appealed in the Common Pleas Court of any county where the ULP occurred, where the person filing the appeal resides, or where the person filing the appeal transacts business. GDRTA is a public employer that resides and transacts business in Montgomery County, but it also transacts business in Franklin County because it prosecutes negotiations and has dealings related to commercial activity that is engaged in for gain or livelihood.
So where all does your client transact business then? Under your definition, as it is in the code?
I'm actually not aware. I do know that it transacts business in Montgomery County, in Greene and Warren and Miami counties, but then also in Franklin County.
And probably in Hamilton and Cuyahoga and...
There are certainly other counties in which it transacts business.
By your definition of transacting business.
Correct.
Probably out of state, too.
Potentially.
Under your transaction.
Correct.
Under your definition, any place you buy stuff would be a place you transact business, right?
Under the common everyday meaning of transacts business as it's used in 4117.13d, yes.
Well, I didn't know there was a common ordinary meaning in a specific place in the code, but the way you see it, any place that your client buys anything, hires attorneys, hires accountants,
given the fact that
buys an insurance policy, you're transacting business in that location, even though the folks on your end are in Dayton.
That's correct.
All right.
Counsel, I want to follow that line of reasoning. You will agree that transacts business is susceptible to more than one reasonable interpretation, would you not?
I would not.
Only one?
I'm sorry?
There's only one?
There's one reasonable interpretation, but that does not necessarily mean that there's only one reasonable definition. This court has been very clear that when it's approaching the opportunity to discern the General Assembly's intent in statutory language, that it will look to dictionary definitions to determine what the common everyday meaning is.
Well, let me use your definition, see if you and I can agree on it this morning. At the trial court level, you suggested that by sending a fax to Franklin County means you're transacting business in Franklin County. Do you stand by that proposition this morning? You send a fax, you're transacting business in Franklin County.
I do.
So therefore, if you send a fax to me in Geauga County, right?
Correct.
Are you transacting business in Geauga County?
Yes.
And if you're aggrieved of an order, can you therefore file suit in Geauga County for something that happened in Franklin County?
Given the fact that the General Assembly has provided no specific limitations, yes.
That sounds ambiguous to me.
There's no nexus to the concept of physical presence then in your definition.
That's correct. There is no nexus to physical presence. And in fact, GDRTA's position that looking to the physical presence tense test under the NLRA is inappropriate unless the court concludes that the statute is ambiguous initially. And here, both of the lower courts failed to find that the statute was ambiguous. This court has a very disciplined and systematic approach to how it's going to determine whether a statute is ambiguous. And the first step of that is always to look at the common everyday meaning as found in dictionary definitions. If there's no reasonable interpretation from those common, from those definitions, then the court may consider, should also consider the context, structure, and grammar of the statute. Here, neither the Franklin County Common Pleas Court nor the Appellate Court considered or gave any real deference to the context, structure, and grammar of 4117.13.
You're familiar with the term forum shopping, are you not?
I am.
Okay, and under your view of the world, in terms of the definition in this statute, every public body or agency in this state could appeal an adverse decision in CERB anywhere, as Justice O'Neill has indicated, that they may have sent a fax in this state. They could go to Marietta, they could go to Gallipolis, they could go anywhere.
Anywhere that they have, in fact, transacted business. Yes, that's correct.
Would that not be what we would ordinarily call forum shopping?
It's not necessarily forum shopping in the fact
that...
Well,
what purpose would be served by such a scattergun approach to where you bring an action?
The purpose is giving the statutory terms, the meaning that was intended by the General Assembly. And the General Assembly did not put any...
You think the General Assembly generally favors forum shopping?
I think the General Assembly intended to enact a very broad phrase in transacts business and did not put any...
Wouldn't it be fair to say over the course of time, it's been pretty obvious that they don't encourage forum shopping?
Yes.
In fact... Franklin County legislators over the years have been very skillful at selecting a particular forum for appeals from state bodies, and that is bring it in Franklin County.
Well, if the General Assembly did not intend for the phrase transacts business to have such a broad meaning, then certainly could go back and revise its choice of language. It could amend this statute at any point in time should it find that the phrase that it's used is too broad. But in this case, it never has.
Counsel, this is a labor matter, is it not?
It is.
And we're talking about CERB here, but the trial court looked to the federal case law to determine that in four separate cases, there was the need to have a physical presence. And you talk about no one found ambiguity. I think that if you look at the appellate opinion from 20 through, paragraphs 20 through 22, there's a clarification there that yes, the trial court did find ambiguity as it did itself. So we're talking about looking at federal law to inform what the General Assembly did here.
That's correct. One point of clarification, it's not that the trial court in the 10th District failed to mention ambiguity, it's that they didn't conduct the type of analysis that this court generally requires when interpreting a statute. And so they made very conclusory findings that there was ambiguity, but they didn't go through the reasoned process that you all would expect. After that finding of ambiguity, however, both courts did look to the federal court's interpretation of the NLRA. It's clear that this court has held that 4117, that when looking for guidance about how to apply 4117, looking at the NLRA is an appropriate source. But the 10th District in this case found that the federal cases actually had a much, I guess I should say, the 10th District applied the federal cases in a way that's not supported by the actual analysis in those federal cases.
What federal cases do you rely on for your position that this is so broad?
Well, we would argue that there isn't an appropriate opportunity to defer to the federal cases because the statute isn't ambiguous. The only way that the court should ever reach
that place. The 10th District, though, looked at four separate cases that supported the position that this is a narrow reading requiring physical presence. I'm asking what federal cases would support your reading that this is a broad definition?
There are no federal cases that have held that this is a broad definition.
Thank you.
Before you sit down, Ms. Edwards, if we agree with your position, what would you have us write here?
What would I have you write?
Mm-hmm.
I would have you write that GDRTA transacts business.
Based on what?
Based upon its $600,000 worth of contracts with entities, with 32 private entities in Franklin County over the course of an illustrative 2.5-year period, based upon the fact that transacts business is not ambiguous in the statute, and that it has a common everyday meaning.
Thank
but
you so
are
much.
The, you know, I'm not sure that this matters, but if those, their services or their products that are being purchased in Franklin County, correct?
That's correct.
You don't run buses in Franklin County.
GDRTA does not run bus routes in Franklin County.
You don't have bus stops, you don't have parking lots, you don't have any of the essentials to a bus service, a delivery of service, correct?
I would disagree about the fact that the contracts that it has in Franklin County are operations essential contracts. These aren't just professional services. The contracts also include the ability for GDRTA to maintain its buses, its purchasing of parts necessary to maintain the buses.
But you don't have to go to Franklin County for that. You can go to other counties. You could probably go to Montgomery County and get people to service your buses and keep them running, correct?
No, actually, in the transit industry, there are specific garages that are very skilled in operating,
maintaining buses. So when a bus breaks down in Montgomery County, you take it up to Franklin County for repair?
Yes. Not all the time, but sometimes, yes.
Sometimes. Okay,
yes.
So it's incidental. It's not always. Incident by incident.
It is incident by incident. That is correct.
It is incidental.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Henshaw.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I'm sharing my time with Mr. Pass, who will speak on behalf of the union for the final 5 minutes of the appellee's time. Let me first say that, Justice O'Donnell, in response to your question to the Regional Transit Authority as to what should you write here, what I heard there was something very specific to this case. Over this 2.5-year period, there were $600,000 of contracts, et cetera, et cetera. That sort of specificity isn't really a rule for future cases. And to me, that suggests that this case is appropriate for improv. This is a very rare situation, as far as we can tell. Since the 1980s, there hasn't been one of these appeals to a county where you have to look at emails or faxes, as Justice O'Neill mentioned, to figure out, are we in the right county for the right jurisdiction?
Well, counsel,
for the appeal?
Let me follow that, if I may, then. What happened here? Did the trial court and the Court of Appeals say this language is ambiguous? That would be option number one. Or in answer to the chief, are they saying, this is a Dayton case, go home?
Well, both lower courts did eventually look at the language and say there are at least a couple of reasonable meanings here, and so did use the language of ambiguity. I would say that there are several tools for looking at plain text where I don't even think you have to reach ambiguity. Let me get into those now. For example, if you look at just the phrase itself, transacts business, compare it to the phrase transacts any business. Both of these phrases were in American law and Ohio law for decades before the General Assembly put the phrase in this statute in 1983. Well, transacts business has had a long acquired narrow meaning. In 1976, the General Assembly modified that phrase when it used it in the long-arm statute. And as the phrase suggests there, it was the long arm of jurisdiction. Transacts any business was intended to reach much more broadly than the well-established meaning of transacts business. So the General Assembly left out the word any when they used this as a jurisdictional statute. That tells us that it is Dayton's Regional Transit Authority here that asks you to pick up the legislature's pen. It is not CERB or the union here. They're asking you to put a word in that the General Assembly left out. And recently and frequently, this court has said it refuses to, by judicial fiat, to use the words in Holzmeier or the Columbus Southern Power case where you didn't put in the word necessary. When there's an obvious missing word in a statute, that's the General Assembly's choice as to whether it should be there, and that choice between transacts.
Seems like you're arguing against your invitation for us to improv this case, because you're now making an argument that there is some ambiguity recognized by the lower court at the trial level and the appellate level, and shouldn't we clarify that?
Well, I'm not saying there's ambiguity here, but if we reach ambiguity, I think that we win, because I don't think Dayton has made any
argument.
I'm
not asking who wins. I'm suggesting your argument about improving the case would just let it be where it is, and then we have to deal with this. But if there is confusion about the difference between transacting business or transacting any business or what the term transacting business means, shouldn't we clarify that in this case?
I don't think there is confusion. That's why, if you look towards the end of our brief, the last two times that there was some filing, in both in Franklin County in those cases, where the dispute obviously belonged elsewhere, was in the mid-80s. So this is an issue that I don't think has arisen in the last several decades.
So do we find other appeals from transit authorities, for example, being referred to, say, Lucas County or Mahoning County for resolution as appeals from these CERB decisions?
Right. So I believe that all the appeals that I'm aware of transit authorities into the Common Pleas Court are in the place where they serve, where they transport passengers, not in Franklin County where they hire a law firm or send a fax.
So your research suggests this is the outlier.
Absolutely.
And the normal circumstance is that it's done in the county, in the Common Pleas Court of the county where the authority is transporting passengers.
Absolutely, and that's why I suggest the improv might be the appropriate resolution here. But if it's not, all the ways you would choose to look at and write a proposition of law here would show that the phrase transacts business, it's not the phrase transacts any business, so it has a narrow meaning. I mean, you could look at what the General Assembly chose to do there and specifically what it chose not to do.
Right.
You could look at Black's Law Dictionary as it was available in 1983, and it defined transacts business. It was
and then Ms. Edwards' argument that there are some $600,000 worth of contracts, 32 contracts on supplies and all the rest of that. There is evidence of that, and you're saying because that's only in the last 2 years and it's sort of sui generis to this case, we don't rely on it, or how?
No, I think what that illustrates is exactly why you should not adopt a rule like the Dayton Transit Authority suggests. It leads to an unclear, unfair rule. It's unclear because why 2.5 years? Why $600,000? We have to ask and answer questions. You turn the Common Pleas Court, sitting as an appellate court, into a fact finder, which is the exact thing you rejected in the Gator Milford decision last year. It's also unfair because based on a single facsimile, for those who still use them, you could have one party drag the other party to the far corners of the state when it has zero connection to the unfair labor practice.
If we were to define transact business and include the need for a physical presence the way the federal interpretation is, would that be a problem?
I don't think it is a problem. I think what we have recommended in our proposition of law is something that is even simpler than that, and it distinguishes between where an entity does its business. Transit authorities are in business to transfer passengers around a region. School districts are in business to educate students. Sometimes they cross county boundaries. It's easy to separate that from transacting any business, sending a fax, buying a computer, hiring a law firm. So we think that is even more straightforward than the physical presence, which was a well-established principle in federal law beforehand.
Would it be fair, Mr. Hinshot, to conclude that your initial recommendation of an improv also keeps us from too many words describing what transacts business means and then having unintended consequences in not only these types of cases, but something else? You know, when you start defining, you don't know where it's going to pop up.
That's certainly
next.
True.
And I think what you've told us is that in terms of this statute, there's been no problem when people have disputes and they don't like the outcome in CERB. If they want to go to court, they go home and go to court.
That's exactly right. They go to the either the place where the unfair labor practice happened or the place where they're headquartered or do their business. And let me point to one other context in administrative law that I think helps make the point that you're making about there being no need to define the phrase. This phrase even predated the 1983 inclusion in this statute in the 1959 Civil Rights Statute in Ohio. And as far as our research discloses, it has never been interpreted there because also in those cases, which of course hit a wider variety of entities, all the private entities, there's never been a problem under that statute either figuring out, well, if we just sue where the alleged civil rights violation had, or appeal, pardon me, or where the business is headquartered, we're fine there also. So there does not seem to be a problem even in the other statute where this exact phrase appears.
So is there a limitation of time for filing in another county, in Montgomery County in this case, because it was filed here? Or do these appeals offer an opportunity for the transit authority to maintain the appeal in Montgomery County?
I think they would be outside the timeline, but as a practical matter here, all the underlying unfair labor practices, the grievances that led to them have all been resolved. And so certainly the union could probably better address that because that is outside the record, but it's our understanding those have all been resolved in a thing that, in processes that CERB doesn't participate in.
Thank you.
So, Your Honors, for the plain meaning of this language is straightforward. Whether you look at what the General Assembly chose, Black's Law Dictionary, you can look to our brief for the other statutes and the structural clues to that meaning. We'll yield the remainder of the time to my friend from the union. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Pass.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name is Joe Pass, and I'm here on behalf of the ATU Local 1385. I think it's important, at least from my perspective, to point out the practical matters that I'm dealing with as a practitioner. As Mr. Hendershot indicated, all the underlying disputes that gave rise to this litigation, kind of took the twists and turns that we're in now, have been resolved either through settlement of the grievance, arbitration, withdrawal, whatever the case may be. So as it relates, as this question gets answered, as it relates to this case, in our view, it'll have zero impact. It's essentially moot. And if it gets remanded somehow, we would certainly argue that before the trial court and the subsequent appellate court. So this decision...
There's no case in controversy right now.
Correct. That's our position on the underlying ULPs. The board found them in violation, ordered them to do two things. One is cease and desist and process the grievances, and two is post the notice. Both of those have been done, and throughout the litigation, the authority has requested stays from every a court, the trial court and the appellate court, and at every stage the courts have denied it, so therefore they went forward. Obviously, given the passage of time, we're done. We're done with those underlying disputes. Now, that having been said, I represent a lot of other unions in Ohio, and to the point the court made earlier is, what do we do in terms of trying to define these words, because it's going to have unintended consequences? That's my concern for how this court addresses this question.
So you would prefer not to see an IA or an provenantly allowed. You'd like us to possibly define the terms transacts business versus transacts any business.
Well, I would request the court leave it alone the way it's been currently addressed, the lower
you
court.
You don't want us to mess it up, is what you're saying.
That's the polite way of putting it, correct? No.
I got it.
And I think we'd want to be left alone in the as it was decided in the 10th Circuit, simply because they put controls on it. If it's allowed to go in the direction that I unfortunately foresee, where their definition gets adopted, it scares me to death, because I can literally create jurisdiction by sending. I get an email from the RTA every day. I'm in Pittsburgh, as the court pointed out. Does that give me jurisdiction in Pittsburgh,
well,
Pennsylvania?
One suggestion comes to my mind. Maybe we should have all of these in Summit County, because that's where the tires come from.
as outlandish as it may sound, that's arguably the result you can create when you allow a contract of a certain value to define, or an email to define, where the jurisdiction is going to be settled. Because as a practitioner, it makes no sense to me that my client in Hamilton County can pick or be forced to go into Cuyahoga County because of an email or a contract that has to buy office supplies. It makes no sense to me. That's why I think that the decision of the 10th Circuit setting the physical presence makes perfect sense. And I will highlight to you in the Friends of the Court brief filed by OPTA, they indicate that the Greater Dayton Regional Transit Authority actually provides service to several other surrounding counties. I think it's Greene, and bear with me, being from Pittsburgh, I don't know your counties by heart.
Well, Council, my concern is in adopting a physical presence, I think that has some ambiguity to it, but also the spillover, and I don't know if that would happen, but to other areas of business-related activities such as taxation. When someone's doing business in Ohio, and we have case law that they're arguing they shouldn't be taxed because they have no physical presence in Ohio, they're doing much the same, an internet business or something like that. So I'm a little leery about building a case where physical presence becomes the guidepost.
I think the distinction between the example you've raised and the one relevant here is that this deals purely with a labor appeal of a CERB order for jurisdictional purposes, and that's why I think the assistance to the federal court decisions is the salient piece of information for us to look at, because they dealt with this already, and I think they were very wary of the concerns the court may have, is if we open this up, there'll be foreign shopping till the cows come home, and that's not something that I think the legislature, you know, the Congress or the General Assembly envisioned. It's not something they wanted to do. So I think, to answer your question, the physical presence piece, I think, is restricted or limited to purely the appeals from the CERB, not necessarily in taxing cases. But I do understand the problem is once you wade into that waters, you open up Pandora's box from which you can't return.
And there's no need for us to even articulate the fact that we are relying on the federal interpretation of this issue because things are working well. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. And I think as the old saying is, bad facts make bad law. We're here because of something very extraordinary happened. Mr. Henderson indicated for 30 years, there's never been a problem. But something like this happened, and I think to tinker with this now creates more problems than it solves. So, thank you.
Thank you. Council, you've got about 3 minutes left.
I'd like to address four main points. The first is that although we understand that in the union's opinion there's no live grievance, GDRTA feels very strongly that there is currently a live issue in dispute. While GDRTA
What would that be?
Yes, GDRTA has been found to have committed an unfair labor practice under 4117. That is what GDRTA was appealing. The CERB's inaccurate conclusion that the facts underlying that dispute were an unfair labor practice.
So you want to, even though there's, as far as the union is concerned, there's no dispute left, you want to continue to litigate this to cleanse your bad name?
Absolutely. In the field of labor relations, having a bad name as an employer can be particularly harmful, particularly in the public sector. And here it's very important to GDRTA to clear its name and resolve this.
Here I thought
conclusion.
We were all getting along so well. Mr. Hendershot entered. Introduces his friend from the labor union. That's a big step, I think Hendershot would tell you.
Ms. Edwards, let me ask you. The propositions of law don't seem to go to the underlying determination of that finding of an unfair labor practice. The only issues we really have are the more generic existence of multiple definitions regarding ambiguity, mm-hmm. and more specifically than this definition of transacts business. So we don't have that matter before us.
I would completely agree. That matter is not before you, nor would it be appropriate at this point in time,
yes.
for consideration.
All right.
Secondly, I wanted to address the forum shopping concern. Because this relates to jurisdiction, if this court were to define transacts business as GDRTA asserts it should, that would merely mean that Franklin County, in this case, has jurisdiction over GDRTA's appeal. But if there is the opportunity for the court to transfer venue, and that would address any forum shopping concerns and is something that the courts are very familiar with doing and very comfortable doing. So it's not necessarily that anyone is going to be dragged across the state to litigate something.
Counsel, that argument was made at the trial court level and denied and is not before our court, is it?
That argument was made at the trial court level on the basis of the fact that the trial court found it had no jurisdiction, which is why the trial court rejected it, because it didn't have jurisdiction.
It's not before the Supreme Court of Ohio today, is it?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
You're just saying that's a fix, so we shouldn't worry about that when we're making our decision.
Correct.
So you would not agree, though, that the thing that we need to really focus on is the definition of transacting business versus what broader interpretation transacts in any business, even though the word any is not contained in the statute?
Let me perhaps restate that. We would argue that transacts business is the phrase that is to be interpreted, and
translate that into transacting any business.
We think that based on how this court defined transact and transacting any business under the long-arm statute, the definition would in fact be the same.
So you want us to look through the lens of the long-arm statute?
Look to the same common everyday meaning of transacts that the court looked to under the long-arm statute, yes, because there's nothing specific in this, in the context, structure, or grammar of 4117 that would suggest an alternate definition is more reasonable.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.